家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry。 又到周末了，每到周末我们都会来聊一聊 TED TED Talk， 希望对大家的雅思和托福学习有所帮助和启发。今天我们还是请来了来自优EI学校的壮壮老师。老师好。
Hello, and we are going to look at something quite interesting for me. This passage talks about how to work better when you are with a team member who always disagrees.这像那个雅思托福口语里边有问到过的，就是说什么人才能成为一个很好的这个团队成员，对吧？你是找那些和你观点相近的呢，还是总是跟你唱对台戏的这样的人去合作呢？比如说 Larry， 你要是想找个搭档，你愿意那个跟你意见极其一致还是有所不同的人呢？
当然是意见一致方向一致的。
哦，
本来这个时间紧迫，要工作效率提高，那就需要一个能够不给我提出异议的人。
哦，你看，大多数人都会是这个观点，但是呢，我们今天听的这一段呢，这个演讲者 by the name of Margaret Heffernan， who is a management thinker， 啊，他是管理的思想家，他呢就提出一个不同的观点。好，今天我们听的题目就是 Dare to Disagree， 啊，就是胆敢持有不同意见。它是这样的内容： Most people instinctively avoid conflict, but as Margaret Heffernan shows us, good disagreement is central to progress.
忠言逆耳嘛。
没错，也就是大多数人呢都倾向于回避各种矛盾冲突，而人家这个人就给我们讲话中用例子具体的就说明了好的不同的意见其实对于前进来讲是有核心推动作用的。 She illustrates sometimes counterintuitively how the best partners aren't echo chambers。啊，什么叫 echo chambers？ 这个 echo chambers， 在好多的这个古代人，比如说古埃及文明，它的这个墓穴里边啊，有这么一个部分呢，就是你自己站在里面说话，能听到自己的回声。那这个部分就叫 echo chambers。 那这里边显然不是指这个洞穴了。我再念一下这句话啊，你看是什么意思。 How the best partners aren't echo chambers。
How the best partners aren't echo chambers， 也就是说你的搭档，最好的搭档并不是一个只会重复你说的话的那个人。
对了，不是像回声似的你说什么他说什么，对吧？也就是说好的搭档呢应该是持有不同意见的。那什么叫做 counterintuitively 啊？那跟那个 intuitive 应该是反义的。
好，先看 intuitive 什么意思呢？
就是知觉，有知觉的。那 counterintuitive 的就是违反知觉的。所以说呢，他呢通过讲话中的例子呢，有的时候就是违反常理的去展示出来啊，这个持不同意见的人其实应该是很好的合作伙伴。 And how great research teams, relationships and businesses allow people to deeply disagree. 所以说呢，好的搭档呢还是应该的话持有不同的意见，这是有利于整个项目的推进，然后尤其是在这个研究的团队，还有呢在这个商务这样的场景啊，而它是允许人们 deeply disagree 啊，在很深的程度上都持有不同的意见啊。我们开始听之前呢，还是先看一下生词。第一个生词呢就是它用到了 whistleblower。 那个 whistleblower 是什么东西啊？其实就是哨子啊，那它其实还有一个别的意思，就是 blow the whistle 是 expose wrongdoing， 就是在吹口哨的时候就引发了别人的注意，所以就把这个不好的事儿呢给它暴露出来，就有点像我们中文那个扎针那意思啊。whistleblower 呢就是暗含着这个啊，把这个不好的事情给它指出来。那也可以想象啊，你都能想象出来，有持不同的意见的人呢就是会唱反调呗。再来呢就是 a crank， C-R-A-N-K， A crank is an unbalanced person who is overzealous in the advocacy of a private cause. 也就是他在支持一个私人的这么一个事儿的上面呢，他是特别的热情，并且呢，他是 unbalanced 啊，就是不平衡的这么一个人，是想法古怪的人。那我们开始听之前呢，再看一下演讲者本人这个 Margaret。Margaret Heffernan explores the all too human thought patterns like conflict avoidance and selective blindness that lead managers and organizations astray. 那他呢探讨什么呢？是 explore the all too human thought， 就是太人性化的这么一个想法，就是对于人来讲太正常的这种 thought patterns， explore the thought patterns， 啊，他要探索这个人们思维的这个规律。比如说这个规律里边包括呢 like conflict avoidance， 那遇到冲突一定就是躲，对吧，躲避的这个态度，这是一种 pattern， 啊，规律。第二种呢叫做 selective blindness， 就是有选择性的闭上眼睛啊，看不见了，是吧？那你觉得碰见什么事儿的时候，是好事还是坏事的时候，人们就容易索性就当没看见了？
坏事吧。
对了啊 ，selective blindness， 故意就看不见了。啊，他说这两件事呢 ，lead managers and organizations astray。这个 astray 就是 lead somebody astray， 就是把某人带向歧途。所以呢，他在探讨这个人性特别常见的这样的思维模式的时候，啊，其中呢就是回避矛盾和冲突，另外呢有选择性的看不见了，这两件事呢，通常会让管理者和组织机构，就是让这个公司大的公司呢走向歧途。哎，这么一听的话，如果此人都大力推崇持有不同意见的人做搭档，那我觉得还是值得去听一听，是吧？
好的，那说了那么多，我们赶紧来听一下这一段非常精彩的演讲，讲的就是 Dare to Disagree。
In Oxford in the 1950s there was a fantastic doctor who was very unusual named Alice StewartAnd Alice was unusual, partly because, of course, she was a woman, which was pretty rare in the 1950s. And she was brilliant. She was one of the, at the time, the youngest fellow to be elected to the Royal College of Physicians. She was unusual, too, because she continued to work after she got married, after she had kids. And even after she got divorced and was a single parent, she continued her medical work.And she was unusual because she was really interested in a new science, the emerging field of epidemiology, the study of patterns in disease. But like every scientist, she appreciated that to make her mark, what she needed to do was find a hard problem and solve it. The hard problem that Alice chose was the rising incidence of childhood cancers. Most disease is correlated with poverty, but in the case of childhood cancers,The children who were dying seemed mostly to come from affluent families. So what, she wanted to know, could explain this anomaly? Now, Alice had trouble getting funding for her research. In the end, she got just £1,000 from the Lady Tata Memorial Prize. And that meant she knew she only had one shot at collecting her data. Now, she had no idea what to look for. This really was a needle in a haystack sort of search. So she asked everything she could think of.Had the children eaten boiled sweets? Had they consumed colored drinks? Did they eat fish and chips? Did they have indoor or outdoor plumbing? What time of life had they started school? And when her carbon-copied questionnaire started to come back, one thing and one thing only jumped out with a statistical clarity of a kind that most scientists can only dream of. By a rate of 2-1, the children who had died had had mothers who had been x-rayed,when pregnant. Now that finding flew in the face of conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom held that everything was safe up to a point, a threshold. It flew in the face of conventional wisdom, which was huge enthusiasm for the cool new technology of that age, which was the X-ray machine. And it flew in the face of doctors' idea of themselves, which was as people who helped patients, they didn't harm them. Nevertheless, Alice Stewart rushed to publish her preliminary findings in The Lancet in 1956. People got very excited. There was talk of the Nobel Prize. And Alice really was in a big hurry to try to study all the cases of childhood cancer she could find before they disappeared. In fact, she need not have hurried. It was fully 25 years before the British and American medical establishments abandoned the practice of X-raying pregnant women. The data was out there, it was open, it was freely available, but nobody wanted to know. A child a week was dying, but nothing changed. Openness alone can't drive change. So for 25 years, Alice Stewart had a very big fight on her hands. So how did she know that she was right? Well, she had a fantastic model for thinking. She worked with a statistician named George Neal, and George was pretty much everything that Alice wasn't. So Alice was very outgoing and sociable, and George was a recluse. Alice was very warm, very empathetic with her patients. George, frankly, preferred numbers to people. But he said this fantastic thing about their working relationship. He said, "My job is to prove Dr. Stewart wrong." He actively sought disconfirmation. Different ways of looking at her models, at her statistics, different ways of crunching the data in order to disprove her. He saw his job as creating conflict around her theories, because it was only by not being able to prove that she was wrong that George could give Alice the confidence she needed to know that she was right. It's a fantastic model of collaboration. Thinking partners who aren't echo chambers. I wonder how many of us have or dare to have such collaborators. Alice and George were very good at conflict. They saw it as thinking. So what does that kind of constructive conflict require? Well, first of all, it requires that we find people who are very different from ourselves. That means we have to resist the neurobiological drive, which means that we really prefer people mostly like ourselves. And it means we have to seek out people with different backgrounds, different disciplines, different ways of thinking, and different experience, and find ways to engage with them. That requires a lot of patience and a lot of energy. And the more I've thought about this, the more I think, really, that that's a kind of love. Because you simply won't commit that kind of energy and time if you don't really care. And it also means that we have to be prepared to change our minds. Alice's daughter told me that every time Alice went head to head with a fellow scientist, they made her think and think and think again. My mother, she said, my mother didn't enjoy a fight, but she was really good at them. So it's one thing to do that in a one-to-one relationship, but it strikes me that the biggest problems we face, many of the biggest disasters that we've experienced, mostly haven't come from individuals, they've come from organizations, some of them bigger than countries, many of them capable of affecting hundreds, thousands, even millions of lives. So how do organizations think? Well, for the most part, they don't. And that isn't because they don't want to. It's really because they can't. And they can't because the people inside of them are too afraid of conflict. In surveys of European and American executives, fully 85% of them acknowledged that they had issues or concerns at work that they were afraid to raise. Afraid of the conflict that would provoke, afraid to get embroiled in arguments that they did not know how to manage and felt that they were bound to lose. 85% is a really big number. It means that organizations mostly can't do what George and Alice so triumphantly did. They can't think together. And it means that people like many of us who have run organizations and gone out of our way to try to find the very best people we can mostly fail to get the best out of them. So how do we develop the skills that we need? Because it does take skill and practice too. If we aren't going to be afraid of conflict, we have to see it as thinking, and then we have to get really good at it. So recently I worked with an executive named Joe, and Joe worked for a medical device company. And Joe was very worried about the device that he was working on. He thought that it was too complicated, and he thought that its complexity created margins of error that could really hurt people. He was afraid of doing damage to the patients he was trying to help. But when he looked around his organization, nobody else seemed to be at all worried. So he didn't really want to say anything. After all, maybe they knew something he didn't. Maybe he'd look stupid. But he kept worrying about it. And he worried about it so much that he got to the point where he thought the only thing he could do was leave a job he loved. In the end, Joe and I found a way for him to raise his concerns. And what happened then is what almost always happens in this situation. It turned out everybody had exactly the same questions and doubts. So now Joe had allies. They could think together. And yes, there was a lot of conflict and debate and argument, but that allowed everyone around the table to be creative, to solve the problem, and to change the device. Joe was what a lot of people might think of as a whistleblower, except that, like almost all whistleblowers, he wasn't a crank at all. He was passionately devoted to the organization and the higher purposes that that organization served. But he had been so afraid of conflict until finally he became more afraid of the silence. And when he dared to speak, he discovered much more inside himself and much more given the system than he had ever imagined. And his colleagues don't think of him as a crank. They think of him as a leader. So how do we have these conversations more easily and more often? Well, the University of Delft requires that its PhD students have to submit 5 statements that they're prepared to defend. It doesn't really matter what the statements are about. What matters is that the candidates are willing and able to stand up to authority. I think it's a fantastic system, but I think leaving it to PhD candidates is far too few people and way too late in life. I think we need to be teaching these skills to kids and adults at every stage of their development if we want to have thinking organizations and a thinking society. The fact is that most of the biggest catastrophes that we've witnessed rarely come from information that is secret or hidden. It comes from information that is freely available and out there, but that we are willfully blind to because we can't handle, don't want to handle, the conflict that it provokes. But when we dare to break that silence, or when we dare to see, and we create conflict, we enable ourselves and the people around us to do our very best thinking. Open information is fantastic. Open networks are essential. But the truth won't set us free until we develop the skills and the habit and the talent and the moral courage to use it. Openness isn't the end. It's the beginning.
大学生英语在线。 欢迎您继续收听。
好，那讲座听完了，将近13分钟，不知道大家觉得是不是比较的疲劳呢？那通常呢，我们如果是开任何的会，或者是去听任何的讲座，最少也得有半个小时，是吧？
对。
所以说呢，大家如果是感到疲劳呢，说明你还是听力跟不上。但是其实呢，你要是想听清楚呢，也还是很方便的，对吧？你可以给它暂停，然后呢，用好多软件呢放慢速度去听。我觉得这个训练呢，你全文，你比如说13分钟，你都放慢速度，听到26分钟那样吧，也没必要。
对，
你可以把你自己比较感兴趣，或者你听着难度特大的，或者你就是觉得有些词要学的，把这一部分呢挑出来，再给它放慢速度，而且你可以先慢，然后呢再给它正常速度。
同学们要问了，这什么软件能够加速和减速的哈？
好多都可以，像那个 Windows Media Player，
还有这个暴风影音，基本上现在主流
常用的，对，
常用的播放器都有这个加速和减速的这样一个功能。
没错，
大家可以研究一下哈。那壮壮老师，说到这个英语学习啊，很多同学都问您是怎么学好外语的。我们知道您是北外外语系毕业的，那这个是比较专业的。那之前您在进大学之前外语水平是什么样的，很多同学都很好奇。
其实进大学之前呢，我那个口语吧也说不成句子。我记得第一天上学的时候哈，那些附中就上的是外语学院附中的同学呢，就夸夸夸夸这个句子都说得出来，一下就是英文一串一串的。其实人家也没用什么我不会的词儿，但是我就说不了那么流畅。过了差不多2-3个月，因为班里好多同学都不是附中上来的嘛，过了2-3个月呢，其实大家也就都跟上了。这是怎么去练呢？你就得是背着说念，光念还不行，因为念呢你还是有拐棍，是人家把那个文章起草好了，你自己要主动的去说啊。比如说你自己给自己掐表1分钟，你看你能说出多少个主谓宾语法都正确的句子，这样练呢，哪怕是只有半分钟，逐渐的延长1分钟，再到2分钟、3分钟，你就能够大片大片的说了。
然后还有一个问题啊，我个人问一下您哈，比如我们说英语说完了就完了，但其实呢，想要提高，还得知道自己犯了哪一些错误，自己还有哪一些方面不足。那这样一来，是不是说我们把我们说的话录音录下来更好一些？
对，这事儿呢是 easier said than done 啊，就是你说起来容易吧，做起来难。不，比如说小猪，你做节目吧，你自己再回放一遍自己说过的节目，你是不是特烦啊？有这种感觉吧？
特别是啊，
真的，我自己就是。那以前直播的时候，领导就说你每天啊直播完了，你再把你的录音再听一遍。哎呦，我一听我就烦了，我就不想再听了。但是好在呢，咱们学英语，咱也不至于一放2钟头的直播自己重新听，对吧？你就是1分钟，我觉得这个呢还是可操作性很强。然后你自己听的时候，往往你自己就知道了，哟，第三称单数没加 s 啊 ，he 和 she 没分。那个do did的全完蛋了，全乱用了。
is was 时态又错了，
又错了，
对，
对吧？然后那个 have has 也都乱用了。那你自己在你听的时候，其实是强化你那个意识，就是那个正确的句子是什么样。然后呢，你在同一个话题呢，你反复说，让它每一次都比前一次的错误去减少。
对，
这样持之以恒，你每天你可能就练5分钟，1分钟一个版本，到第5个版本的时候，争取让它就没错了。
哎，
那你就是假以时日，必定大功要告成。
嗯，每天只要进步一点点，哪怕1分钟的练习，都可以让你的英语在一段时间以后突飞猛进。
没错，
希望大家能够运用这样的方法把英语学好，把自己的口语提高一个档次。好，今天的节目就是这一些，感谢大家的收听，欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群90127292，下载更多的英语学习资料。我们下期节目再见。
再见。
给你一个机会，你最想得到什么东西？
汽车
Money
豪宅
漂亮女朋友
芭比娃娃
健康。
北京人民广播电台提醒您，关爱自己的健康才能带来长久的幸福。
up in your fast car whistling my name. Open up a beer and you say get over here and play a video game. I'm in his favorite sundress, watching me get undressed, take a body downtown. I say you're the bestest, leaning for a big kiss, put his favorite perfume on, go play a video game. It's you, it's you, it's all for you, everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you, tell me all the things you wanna do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I ever even knew. They say that the world was built for two. Only worth living if somebody is loving you. Baby, now. Swinging with the old stars, living for the fame. Kissing in the blue dark, playing pool and wild dots, video game.
You alright? Alright.
He holds me in his big arms, drunk and I am seeing stars. This is all I think of. Watching all our friends fall in and out of old clothes. This is my idea of fun. Playing video games. It's you, it's all for you. Everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you. Tell me all the things you wanna do. I heard that you like the bad girls, honey. Is that true? It's better than I ever even knew. They say that the world was built for two. Only worth living if somebody is loving you. Baby, now you do. Tell you all the time, heaven is a place.